All right, nice to have you back with us. Bill Lasky is with us as well, and we're going through some of these games that MLB TV had had on this week, and they've been fabulous, really, just a lot of fun. And one I saw earlier, Philadelphia Phillies, Chicago Cubs, Wrigley Field, May 17th, 1979, and the wind is blowing out, and this game has Phillies eventually winning the game in the 10th inning on a home run by Mike Schmidt, 23-22. There were 50 hits in the game, home runs all over the place. Dave Kingman hit three of them. And maybe in my lifetime, the most unusual game that I've ever seen or heard or ever read about took place at Wrigley Field that day. And joining us, and Bill Lasky, you can introduce him as well, the third base coach for the Chicago Cubs that day. And I'm sure he has a lot to say about this game, and that's the wonderful, wonderful friend of the show and the Giants minor league instructor, and that is the great Joey Amalfitano. Joey, how are you?
Wonderful. Good. I watched that game myself by accident. I was channel searching, and they said that they were going to show 30 of the wildest games. I said, I wonder what this is going to be about, and by God, it was the first one. It was 30. But that was a long time ago. But, yeah, you described it well right there. Yeah, that's the way it ended
up. Joey, thanks for joining Marty and I. And it was good talking to you the other day about this game. And, you know, I pulled up the box score on it. And as a pitcher, both starting pitchers only lasted a third of an inning. Randy Lurch lasted a third with him, five earned runs. And then Dennis Lamp on the other side only lasted a third. And he gave up six earned runs. So right then and there, what were you thinking watching both of these starting pitchers getting pounced on after a third
inning? I was wondering where I was going to go to dinner. No, actually, Lurch hit a home run in the first inning and didn't stick around to finish the first inning. And, Bill, you watched the show, and they had Bob Costas, I believe, hosted it. And Boa was on the show, who was the shortstop that day. By the way, he got five hits. And he commented about batting practice. It was like a driving range there. Balls were leaving the ballpark in batting practice, and it just carried into the game. A lot of pitches got up, a little movement on them. A lot of movement after it hit the barrel of the bat. But, yeah, you know, in that game, there were two guys that – pitched in relief. There were three of them. Tug McGraw came in the fifth inning, and as mm-hmm. Boa explained so well, that Danny Ozark was the manager, and he wanted to win this game badly because it did start off kind of wild. And at one time, I think we were down 17-6, and we came back. But anyway, he brought in Tug McGraw in the fifth. And followed him was Willie Hernandez, who won the Cy Young Award with Detroit years later, and Bruce Sutter, who also was a Cy Young winner and a Hall of Famer. There was some serious pitching talent in that game. It didn't look like
it
by the score. But
When you look at it, you went 10 innings. There was 50 hits in that game.
50. That's a lot, yeah, it's a lot. Kingman smoked three of them, and two of them really hit well. One of them, probably one of the longest home runs I've ever seen, and I've seen a few games. That ended up in about the third apartment building there off of Waveland Avenue, that was a wild game, 4 hours plus.
Joey, yes, you're right. 4 hours, 3 minutes. 14,952 didn't work that day and showed up to watch the game. But Kingman, three home runs. You're right. And on Taveras hit one. I'm just looking at the box score. And Buckner had the grand slam. And Jerry Martin had a home run. And tell us about Dave Kingman, though, Joe, about the kind of player he was. Because, you know, we know the strikeouts, but what about him as a ball player?
Well, he was an offensive threat. I mean, a serious threat. This guy had a tremendous power. I was with him as a coach with the Giants and also San Diego and then with the Cubs. And he was a dead fastball hitter. He didn't miss very many fastball, but he did strike out a lot. But he had awesome power. He had a very good arm. He had a very good arm, played left field. But I don't know at times if he was really into it, to be honest with you. You know, the guy had a world of talent. But I don't know if he had the burning desire to play the game. Like some, with his talent, he should have even made a bigger statement than he did. But I think sometimes the game appeared to me, the way he approached it, he wasn't totally committed.
You know, I remember him so well. You know, he came out of USC as a real top prospect. And then I faced him when he was with the Mets. And he hit some balls way out of Shea Stadium, too. But, you know, the big thing that I always remember about Dave, he always stride, but his hands would always stay back. And he could hit that low ball. He could drive that ball real well. Good power. As you said, he was tall. He didn't crunch over. He used his size. And you could off-speed him, but yet he still could get the bat on the ball. But you couldn't miss a fastball. If you didn't hit location, he was going to hit it, and he hit it pretty good. And when he hit him, he had those towering home runs. You knew once he cracked.
Oh, yeah. There was no doubt. That's right, Bill. There was no doubt when he hit him. I got to tell you about a game at Candlestick. For some reason, I was playing first base this particular day, and we were playing the Cardinals. And I think the three of us are all familiar with that ballpark. At least we all were in it at one time. So if you remember that visitor's dugout, the manager of the visiting team, in this case was Whitey Herzog, traditionally they'd always stand out in the dugout in front of that plywood bat rack. Okay, mm-hmm. And that's where Whitey was. Well, the Cardinals had the bases loaded, and there was two outs. Okay. And for some reason, like I said, Dave was playing first base, and there was a ball hit down to him, which usually it's kind of an unassisted play, and the inning's over, there's two outs. Well, for some reason, he fired it to the plate. the catcher went down because the pitcher, which is supposed to do a break over that side when the ball's hit, so there were... They both went over there, and there wasn't anybody there, but I could still see Whitey. This ball was going right for him, because like I said, Dave had a wonderful arm. He sprinted to the other end of the dugout, and for the life of me, you know, I never asked Dave, what was you thinking about there, because God only knows what he was thinking about.
Boy, it's so funny. I remember that, and I'll tell you, the catcher was Dave Rader.
He went over to back up in case there was a throw to the pitcher who was covering, which neither one of those things happened. But the only thing was whoever was at the plate was the umpire. That was it.
That's it.
This ball. And Bill, you know, Dave did not even break towards the bag. He just cocked up and let her fly. Boy, here it comes.
Yeah, I was there with my friend Michael Gaines. Michael Gaines and I were there that day to see that. I'll never forget it. Hey, Joe Amalfitano with us. So many wonderful years in baseball, Joey. You go back to being a bonus baby in 1954 with the New York Giants. But you had Bill Buckner on that Cub team, and in this game, he was 4-for-7, drove in 7 runs, had the big home run off McGraw. Tell me about Bill Buckner, because we always remember him for the World Series, but there was a lot to him.
He was schooled very well in the Dodger organization, and I commended Tommy, because this guy was a real professional hitter. He could hit, and he played first base. Unfortunately, you know, his knees weren't sound towards part of his career, but in Chicago, this guy could just hit. He could hit in the closet with the lights out. He was unbelievable. He had a wonderful stroke, and actually, in my last year there, I ended up managing, and he won the batting title. I remember went down the last day. It was Bill Buckner, Keith Hernandez for the Cardinals, and Templeton with the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. Well, Templeton did not play that day, and Hernandez did, and Buckner went, I think, 1-for-4, and he won the title. He was and deserving of two. The guys that was a pure hitter. We didn't have a record-wise, we didn't have a real good team, but about 3 years later, that team, with the addition of guys and the subtraction of guys, which happens, they become a pretty good team. But he was well-schooled in baseball. Really, this guy knew how to play.
You know, Joe, you hit it on the head right there. He was a contact hitter. You barely got to strike him out because
yeah.
he put the ball in play, and he put it from the third base line to the first base line. He'd go out of the strike zone to make contact. A great hit-and-run guy. He always could do that so well. But he was that type of hitter. As you said, he could win batting titles because he was that an aggressive hitter. Similar to like,
yep.
you know, I'm going to throw Rod Carew out there because Rod Carew was the same kind of guy to put the ball everywhere. Tony Gwynn the same way. Bill Buckner was in that same class
yeah.
of a hitter because he could make contact as well as drive the ball, too. He could hit the ball out of the ballpark if you made a mistake on
him. Oh, no question. And if he was looking for something, he could do it, especially in Wrigley Field. He could do it. But he was those three fellas you mentioned, Bill, yeah, they were excellent contact hitters. That is really nice, too, when you start a runner with those guys hitting, you know, and the count's right, you got a good chance of first and third. It doesn't necessarily have to be a hit and run. It's kind of a run and hit because those guys mm-hmm. were especially they knew the strike zone. They struck out very little. All the things, short, compact swing with some power. Yeah, those three guys could really hit. Yep.
Yeah.
Boy, what I love watching this game, Joe Malfitano with us, the third base coach of the Cubs, is watching Pete Rose. And and I must tell you, when he spikes the ball at the end of the inning, and you watch that, nobody today hunches over. No one has a batting stance like that, like Oscar
nope.
Gamble did.
No.
I mean, people, they choke up. They choked up and hit the ball. Pete Rose, Joey, I'll tell you, to watch that game with Pete Rose, it opened my eyes again as to how fabulous this guy was as a player.
Well, he in that game, Marty, if you remember, he was running a ball, scoring from third base on a fly ball, and was like the winning run. And his concern was, as was pointed out by Boa, was he wanted to get to the plate because in fear of the runner behind him, which I think was Boa, would come from second to third, and maybe they make the play at third. And if he was to go in, Pete, from third to home on 50 cents on the dollar, which I like to say, not us. And he doesn't score. He doesn't score before that out is made. That run won't count. He was a fierce competitor. He loved to play. What the heck? He's the hit king. Good player all around. Played different positions. Played them all well. Been on some championship teams with that Red Machine. They used to.
Yeah.
I'll say one thing about that team. They never played with the same ball every inning. Those guys are good hit.
Yeah, but I tell you what, Marty, you hit it on the head. He'd always spike that ball on the third.
Yeah.
You always saw Pete Rose do that play in first base. And, you know, his intensity was every at bat, every play, you know, facing him when the Phillies with, you know, Mike Schmidt and Joe Morgan. I mean, they just had hitters after. But Pete was the guy when he got on base, you had to keep an eye on him because he'd steal a base on the second for you. And like Joey said, he'd go first and third all the time. And he had always seemed to make it.
Yeah. He ran the bases very well. He was a good baseball player.
Fabulous.
Smart. Yeah.
What about everybody choking up on the bat? Well, you don't see that anymore today.
Well, I don't see that too much anymore. You know, I'll say this, but home runs are up. Strikeouts are up. And in some cases, the attendance is down. They better pay attention to that last one, okay? They better
no
pay attention to that
games,
last one.
Joey, starters aren't going to do complete games anymore.
Starters. Hey,
where'd that go?
Listen, Boa commented again, getting back to Larry, who played in that game. They said they took the team bus in, like we all did, from O'Hare downtown. And I guess Tug McGraw did not really particularly care to pitch at Wrigley Field like a lot of other pitchers. You know, that's a tough little place there. And he said, well, I'll see you guys in 4 days. Because he wasn't going to get – he didn't want no part of it. He got into that game, like we just said, in the fifth inning. And he didn't last.
Yeah. He went two-thirds innings. He didn't get a full inning in, and he was a closer.
Right. He was a closer. He didn't know why he was going in the fifth. I can tell you a story. I managed my first game at Dodger Stadium. I took over for Preston Gomez, and we had a nice little lead but gave it up, and then they beat us in the 10th on a home run off of Bruce Sutter. All right? And Leo DeRocha was my first manager, who I feared to no end, scared of him. Well, anyway, I ended up coaching for him and all that. So I was in, the game was over, and I get a phone call, and it's him. he watched the game, and he said to him, "Hey, you got to bring Sutter in the fifth, the sixth inning, Bill, Marty, was the sixth inning." I said, "Sixth inning?" He said, "No." He goes, "Yeah, you got to stop it right there. You got to stop it." And I said to myself, "I don't think I'm long for this position too long."
Well, what about Sutter?
I didn't last very long, no.
Well, Joey, what about Sutter? And became a Hall of Famer. Did you see that right away with him?
Well, he was unhittable. He mastered that split finger. Freddie Martin was the pitching coach, and Bruce had long fingers, and he ever mastered it, and he threw it almost every pitch. That and a slider. Once in a while, a fastball, but, fierce competitor. He liked the action, too. He was a Hall of Famer. Did I see it? No, I didn't. I didn't see that, but he deserves it. I guess as things went on, a lot of those guys are they deserving? But as they go on, they prove their worth, and then they qualify for it, and then the press puts them in there. And he deserves it.
Joe, you hit it right on the head. He mastered that split finger when he was with the Cardinals.
Yeah.
It was lights out when he came in, or he'd get that ground ball out. That was the other thing. You never saw guys going up there, too. They were just trying to get base hits off of them, make contact. And they always ground out, and when they had that turf, it was Ozzie Smith 6-3 every time, it seemed like.
Well, you're right, and that he mastered that ball. He kept it down too, Bill, which helps a lot with ground balls. But this, when I was there at the Cubs at the end, we had him, and then Lee Smith came after him. And Lee Smith was finally put in the Hall of Fame here a year ago, which was about time that happened. Two opposite types of pitchers, But
you sure did.
Lee Smith.
Totally opposite,
Oh, yeah,
It was true. Lee Smith was that kind of guy. He was a starter when I faced him way back in Des Moines when he was starting with the Cubs. And then they moved him to be a closer. And he was just
phenomenal. I'll tell you how smart I was. I thought I was coming back because I had a two-year contract, but they changed the front office. And like a lot of people, when they buy a house as is, I like to change the furniture, and I was part of the furniture. But anyway, no, that's the way I look at that, really. When a new guy comes in, he bought the house as is, and all of a sudden maybe the wife don't like the dining room table or the couch, get it out of here. That's the way it works. But anyway, I'm stuttering here because I forgot my train of thought. I apologize. But anyway.
No, it was about Lee Smith. We're talking about Lee Smith, how dominant he was.
Yeah, Lee Smith. My last game I managed in the big leagues, I thought I was coming back the next year. Well, I didn't, all right? So I looked at it and I said, I'm going to start this guy, see if maybe we have a starter with him. It was against Philadelphia. Marty and Bill, this is great, too, because the first inning, he walks the first three guys. And then they get one run in, and then they don't do anything. And he pitches, I think, seven innings, giving up the one run, I think two or three hits, and that was the end of his starting career, and it was definitely the end of my managing career. Yeah, I started him. I'm real smart. Yeah, I know. You know what? I want to share something with you two guys. I've known you both for a long time, and I know that your audience or whatever, they want to look this up on Google, but I've been around a long time. And this year here is my eighth decade.
Wow.
And you know what? Those 8 years, I have never missed a season out of uniform.
Hmm.
I'm very, very proud of that.
Wow.
That's a great honor, too.
saying that, you know, the other guy that's over there is a guy named Willie Mays. He's got about eight. All right? And then the guy that's got eight and worked for one outfit, that's the San Francisco Giants, that would be Mike Murphy.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
And you know what?
Mike Murphy.
I sometimes wonder, I'll be honest with you, what people think about, not the fans. How often does that happen? Am I patting myself on the back? No, I'll tell you what it means. It must have been that I did something good. That's why I got to last that long.
Well, you're pretty special.
The knowledge you have.
Yeah, you're pretty special in the game. But the fans should know. Look, you were there in 1954 when Mays made the catch. What do you think of that?
I can still see that too. I get to see that every World Series, Marty. When pregame, and then I get to see Gibson's home run. So I was in uniform for both of those.
Yes, you were.
A little bit more active than the Gibson one, because I wasn't playing with the Giants. I didn't play at all. Rightfully so, too.
I still love your. The best story is when you had your first big day in the big leagues, and they got you on the bus, and that it's worth a quick tell. Go ahead.
I was for 1954, and I finally got into a game by default in Cincinnati, Crosby Field. Elvin Dark got collided with Ted Kaczynski at first base. He had arms like telephone poles and cracked his rib, and I got in the game by default. And I finally got my first base hit up the middle off a guy named Jackie Cullum. Now I'm coming up to hit in the 10th inning. The score is tied 2-2. And a guy named Mays comes up to me and says, "Hey, Joe, this guy's going to start you off with a first ball fastball. If it's a strike, he's going to throw you a curve." Well, that's wonderful, you know. Okay, well, I get in there. Here the guy comes, a sinking fastball, strike one. Anyway, he threw me a curve, and I swung and I hit it in the left field gap for a double, you know. So Willie was a hell of a player and a hell of a coach. So Lockman butted me over to third, and then Willie hit a fly ball. We win the game 3-2. All right, get on the team bus. Crosby Field. I'm in the back of the bus. I always sat in the back of the bus. Traditionally, and I think still today, I don't know if it's today, but the manager always, in your time, Bill, getting on the team bus, the manager sit in the on the left-hand side when you got in the first seat.
Yes, sir.
That's and it. Usually the seat next to him is by invitation only. That was when my time, even when I coached for Tommy, is by invitation. Anyway, I got to the back of the bus, and all of a sudden, you know, here comes two or three guys. Bobby Hoffman, great guy. Hey, Leo gets on the bus, Joe, go sit next to him. Oh, no, no way in the world. I'm not going to do that. Another guy, and then Sal Magley, who I idolized, he said, "Joe, it'll be good." I said, "No, I don't want to do that." And Alvin Dark, who I thought walked on water, I admired him so much. He was a team captain. He came back, Joe, he says, "When Leo gets on the bus, go sit up. That'll be good for the team. I'll have some laughs." So I said, whatever he said was gospel with me. I said, okay, I'll do it. So you not only can you can see Leo coming, because you always wore these alpaca sweaters, and they were beautiful. But you know, you see him, you can smell him, too. He's heavily cologned. So the bus pulls out of that parking lot at Crosby Field, and I get up. And I walk down the middle of that aisle of the bus, and I go sit next to him. And he looks at me, and he says, "What are you doing here?" Well, I said, "Leo, the way I look at it," and this is about August the 7th, huh? August the 7th. And I'm 2-for-3. 2-for-3, though, right there at that moment, that time. That's 600-something, I think.
Sure.
Well, I said, "Well, Leo, the way I look at it, I'm not only leading our team in hitting, I'm leading the National League in hitting." So he probably said something like, "Get yourself in the back of the bus." Didn't quite say it that way.
Get yourself in the back of the bus.
So I got up and I went in the back. And so the guys, when I was going, "What did he say?" And I told them what I said. And everybody started laughing. And then they told me he was even laughing. What? What was I going to do? I had my moments. That was my moment.
It was great. And you're still doing it. You've got a great career. I know you meant so much to Ron Wotus now that he's the third-base coach.
Ron Wotus, I was asked to come over and speak to the president's staff by Cap, and I did. And Wotus said some nice things about some of the fellows that maybe I was asked upon to help by some guys that are pretty good. Well, Flannery, I'll drop it on you. Flannery, Ron Renicky, Dino Ebo, and Glenn Hoffman. Those guys are they're real good at what they do. And Wotus. And you know what separates those guys from a lot of the guys? Because I've talked to other people about that come to me. They have, first of all, aptitude and retention, which is very important. Whatever we do in life, in our game, Bill, you know, aptitude and retention is a big thing. Okay, you got to have the skills and the ability. We've seen guys skill with ability, but sometimes they lack in those two things. And the other thing that Ronnie has, he has the instinct. The instinct. Yeah. Because it happens fast. You're on your feet down there.
You know, Joe, you mentioned all those names, and I guarantee every one of those guys will say you help them the most, because I've talked to Wotus. Those guys say you are an encyclopedia to them, and you've been out there for so many years, and what you've accomplished, and every one of those guys admire you. And you know, so does Marty and I. I mean, we watched you so many times, and of course, I had to watch you in a Dodger lineup. You had to go on third base. You were always screaming at me on the mound.
No, I didn't do that. No, I didn't scream. No. But I was busy.
That was your buddy Tommy.
I hope my buddy Tommy. Well, the show's not long enough. We can really have a fun time talking about that. I mean, I got one classic. Someday maybe you may want to hear it. It's about Rod Paranassi. You were in Atlanta playing. It's a classic. A classic. Yeah. And there, in fact, I was on the phone today with Jack Hyatt. Who, by the way, he's another lifer there with the Giants. He's another guy there. He, along with God bless his soul, Jimmy Davenport or Willie McCovey, to cut their veins, and orange and black would come out. I swear to God it would. But that's a
those
great.
Are great name. Those are some great names right there, Joey.
I played with Willie Mack in the minor leagues 2 years in both places. I said this at his ceremony of life, a celebration of life. We won because of him. Yeah, he is. Yeah. And, you know, along with it being such a great player, what a nice man.
Sure was.
A nice man.
Sure was.
Jeez.
Sweet.
I know.
Like you. We love you. We love you, Joey.
Okay, listen, thank you. You got Bill, you have that fantasy cap now. You can fire that up again.
I'm going to try. Sooner or later, Joey. Sooner or later, my friend. But thank you again for all your time. It's been great. It's great stories with you.
Well, it's always nice to talk to you, and I really appreciate you, Bill, for thinking of me. And what else am I going to say? God bless all of you.
Stay healthy. Be safe, be healthy.
Yep. Thanks, Joey. All right.
Bye. Bye.
Good night, Joey. Thanks, bud.
Wow. I'm getting a text from my dear friend Michael Gaines. Bill, I've known Michael since we're, sophomores in high school back in Miami Beach, and one of the greatest Giant fans ever.
Uh-huh.
And loves the game, and he just can't get over how much he's enjoyed the show tonight, and especially someone like Joey.
Joey's fantastic. That was a great story about Dave Kingman. I'm glad you were at that game. That had to have been hilarious. No one at home plate, and he throws
it. I was there. Michael and I were there. He threw the ball. I could still see Dave Rader stretched out. He didn't know where the ball was going. I'll never forget
it. Nobody was at home but the umpire. That was a great line by Joey.
I'll never forget it. The shock. Everyone was running off the field. And this guy throws a home with two out.
Crazy. His memory is so clutch. I sat on the phone the other day with him. We talked for an hour. It was just story after story.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
That's
he's
what's
a
great
gem.
About Joey.
And he's a smart man.
Nice. And you know, Marty, I'm not lying. Wotus and Flannery, Renicky, those guys loved him for what they taught him. He was
true.
An encyclopedia at third. And you talk to each one of those guys. Joey was the first guy to sit down and open his heart out to each one of them.
Boy, beautiful. All right, let's take a break, and we'll be back with Bill and a little bit more right after this.